I love engaging with subjects through play and through games. For me, play and game, part of it is about the state that you're in as you're playing it. And I think playfulness can open up a receptiveness to others and to new content and to difficult things that is really kind of necessary, but also really wonderful.
Welcome to How to Play in Slow Time, interviews on creativity, where artists pull back the curtain on their creative practices and share how they listen, play, embody, imagine, model, and collaborate towards discovering something new. In this episode, performer, game designer, and counsellor Rachel Roberts shares the importance of play to her theatre-making practice. She also explains how her counselling training helps her to create the critical distance audiences need to play, joyfully, unrestrained, but also critically, in her games and performances.
So my name is Rachel Roberts. I'm an artist. The word artist, the title of artist, has come to be the main way that I describe my practice now. It wasn't always artist, but I think artist feels really lovely as a broad signifier of the work. I'm theatre and performance art trained through a program that had a big focus on devising. I'm also a counsellor. I retrained as a counsellor a few years ago, and I work as a counsellor. That's my job, my career, my secondary practice. I think I bring myself as an artist to the counselling, but the counselling is not an arts practice. Same as I bring the practice of counselling to my arts practice now. They inform each other, but they do not replace each other. I put on performances that are usually about a question about why we are doing something in a particular way, or how we could maybe be doing something better. And I try to use that performance as a way of being in conversation with an audience. So rather than presenting, I hope that it will be a relationship of conversation, even though there is a power dynamic of who's in the audience and who's on the stage. I try to be playful. Sometimes what I do is I play dress-ups as a way to explore things that might be sometimes really hard to talk about or really hard to feel, and try to normalize or explore or explode by putting myself on the line to say, hey, here's something I'm struggling with. Maybe you're also struggling with it. Maybe some of the questions that I have about how I'm struggling with it are helpful to you. Always trying to not have myself then become the expert. I like to do a lot of the dreaming. So time spent usually alone with other people imagining something and then working with that imaginative thing, either writing or making music or just embodying an imagined persona, often alone because there was a shame-based element to the witnessing of it, which is still something that continues to be unpacked for me. Yeah, a huge amount of inner play, which I think is what still forms a large part of my practice. And people might say that that's avoiding the real work. Like sometimes in a teaching context, when people are thinking about what they're going to be experimenting with, you say, just get up on the floor and do it. It'll be easier once you're up on the floor. And part of me is always like, oh, but I like this part. I like where I get to dream about what it could be. So I went to UOW, University of Wollongong, because I didn't get into NIDA, which I look back on now and I'm like, good. Like, that was good. I was a better fit for UOW at the UOW of the time. But it would have been a very different life had I gotten into NIDA, I think, maybe not. And at UOW, through teachers like Chris Ryan, who was in the Sydney Front and version 1.0, the possibilities of a theatre that was not, you know, this proscenium arch musical theatre was shown to me, and that was very freeing. And there was the artist that we studied that I felt very inspired by. And yeah, from there I was like, oh, so I can make my own stuff and it can be kind of weird. That's nice. And people don't have to fully understand it, huh? But that was freeing to be like, some of the creative control is here within me. I can make my own thing. So Boho Interactive, which is a collective of theatre artists, that then opened up the world of gaming for me, which is wonderful and I love it. We've been to the International Board Game Convention in Essen in Germany 3 times, which is like a beautiful work trip. Yeah, so that's where the gaming stuff started. For O Week, I have a 1 hour slot to introduce groups of about 55 students to policies and procedures, including sexual harassment and grievances. And I was like, okay, that's heavy, but it's really important to know. How can it also be an opportunity to get to know the people that you're with a bit better and maybe start to create a sense of feeling knowledgeable and empowered within the system that you're in? Can we turn that into a game? So the current thread of the game is that in small groups, the groups are going to create their own new student at the college, create a little figurine of them and a little student ID for them and some traits for them, and they're going to be on that student's team as that student then tries to survive semester one. The student is going to make some choices and have some things happen to them and do some things that the team is not necessarily going to agree with, but their job as the team is to help the student get through it. So things like, we have to teach the sexual harassment policy, so things like your character tells an off-colour joke after class and we're going to deal with the fallout of that. You might not be okay with the fact that they told that off-colour joke, but you're on their team. How are you going to help them get through that? There's a counselling term, mostly from person-centred therapy and from Carl Rogers, called non-possessive caring. So I care, but I'm also not in control and you are not my possession. And I think instilling some of that through having this character that you've created, so it's fresh, but it's also not, it doesn't belong just to you, it belongs to the group. And also, you know, it's only going to be here for 1 hour. I think that can create some non-possessive caring. I love engaging with subjects through play and through games. For me, play and game, part of it is about the state that you're in as you're playing it. And I think playfulness can open up a receptiveness to others and to new content and to difficult things that is really kind of necessary but also really wonderful. In Boho, we open up most of our games with a bit of an intro for expectation as you're playing, and one of our expectations is that losing isn't bad, it's just different. Hopefully by giving permission to fail in that way of trying to instill some curiosity about losing or about things going wrong, I guess embracing the queer art of failure altogether, I think hopefully invites perfectionism to just take a seat to the side, and also maybe invites fear of failing or fear of losing to just kind of be there, and like, it's okay, we're going to fail together, I'll fail first so you can see what it looks like, and then we're just going to figure out a way through it. Or maybe that means that gaming is disarming, but sometimes it is. I think actually what we've found is that the process of gaming, it's not that it's disarming, but it shows you your armor really clearly and really quickly, so that you can then hopefully just put it to the side. For me, if a game is put in front of me, what I immediately feel is a sense of competitiveness. And so for someone to say, you might be feeling really competitive about this, but what I want you to do is just explore what it is also like to lose. That for me is an invitation to put that competitiveness to the side. So that is, I guess, a process of disarming, but I have to acknowledge the armor that comes up first. The idea of play is present across all gaming and theatre and performance and counselling, and people approach that from different theories. You know, there's a polyvagal approach that would look at what your autonomic nervous system is doing that allows you to engage in play. You have to have a foundation of safety that you're working from, and safety doesn't mean that everything is 100% safe all the time, but just that there's enough safety that anything that pushes you towards the edge of your comfort zone feels thrilling or uncomfortable rather than unsafe. It was a 50-minute solo theatre work called Everything You Ever Wanted, and it was deeply personal, fueled by a lot of passion and anger, exploration of white science, white stigma, through the lens of someone who was in the midst of recovering from an eating disorder. A very personal work. So I thought about, how can I create a space where both my humanity and my lived experience is held at the centre, but not exclusively? So I'm also inviting other people's experience to still be there in the room. how do I let the audience know that I am okay enough to keep this on track? There's been a bit of a trend with direct address work, solo work, especially in comedy, of that breaking the fourth wall to say, just so you know, I'm okay. This happened and it's in the past and I'm okay. So it was also a bit of that, of like, how do I create this relationship with the audience where they will trust me enough to let me talk about some really painful things and have them not be like, oh, Jesus Christ, like, how's she going to be when she gets off stage? Because when you're too worried about someone, you're not taking in what they're saying. So I wanted to establish that sense of safety of, you know, I'm okay, but also I know that this might bring up stuff for you, so how do we take care of you in the audience? Some of that was probably presumptuous. There were probably lots of people there who didn't need to take care of themselves in that way, but I know that there were people who did, just because of the nature of the content that was going on in the show. I knew it would draw people who had an interest already. I kind of wanted to center them a bit and let them be the ones that feel cared about. I think for my own creativity, it's about flowing through linear and non-linear ways of thinking and of expressing. There's an intentionality in that, of like trying to force myself to not stay in either of those places. I think it's about becoming more aware of and then sometimes unlearning ways of being, because sometimes the ways of being that we are in stifle a lot of creativity. And so there is this big personal unlearning with creativity. I think we come into the world usually very open to creative ways of being and thinking and making, and they get cordoned off usually by the societies that we're in. And so we're just trying to like open the windows and let the air in.
This episode is part of a series of interviews with extraordinary people talking about their creative practice. You can find the rest of the series wherever you get your podcasts. You can also purchase our book titled How to Play in Slow Time, which unpacks the theory, practice, and teaching approaches to creativity from Brill Publishers at brill.com. How to Play in Slow Time was created and produced by Charlotte Farrell, Alexandra Talamo, Brioni Trezais, and Maria White. Edited and scored with original music by Tom Hogan. Special thanks goes out to the Technical Resource Centre and the Creative Practice Lab at UNSW Sydney, where our podcast was recorded. UNSW Sydney exists on the lands and waters that have been cared for since time immemorial by the Bidjigal people of the Eora Nation, whose sovereignty has never ceded. I'm Alex Telmo, and we hope you'll join us on the next episode of How to Play in Slow Time, interviews on creativity.